if you are located outside of the European Union, the United Kingdom and or Switzerland, then you need an authorized representative. So, I have a good news. You have found it with Easy Medical Device. And if you are also in need of an importer in Europe and in Switzerland, then contact us definitely at info@easymedicaldevice.com. info@easymedicaldevice.com, and I'm sure we can help you. Welcome to the Medical Device Made Easy podcast. I am Mounir Elazouzi, a medical device expert specialized on quality and regulatory affairs. My mission is to help you learn how to place a compliant medical device on the market. For that, I share with you my experience and the one of others on this podcast. Are you ready for your dose of regulation and standards today? Okay, so let the show begin. Welcome to the Medical Device Made Easy podcast. Here is Mounir Elazouzi from easymedicaldevice.com, and today we will talk about a certain situation that I'm always asked by people, so I wanted to make it on the podcast, which is if you don't have a physical manufacturing, if you are not physically manufacturing your products, meaning you are just an office, can you still be MDR certified? So I have with me Adam Izakrai, a consultant at the Other Consultant Company, who will be helping us on that. So Adam, welcome to the Medical Device Made Easy podcast.
Thanks, Mounir. Nice to be here again.
So yeah, we had you, Adam, with the other topics. So today we'll look at this one specifically about physical manufacturing or not. Can you first maybe make a small introduction of yourself, and then we can start with the questions?
Yeah, sure. So Adam Isaacs Ray. I have my own consultancy company called The Other Consultants. So I've been in medical devices essentially my whole career, working predominantly within quality and regulatory with manufacturers. Basically giving them that kind of holding hand, and ensuring that they're getting all the technical documentation requirements, and also helping on, say, preclinical studies, as well as, you know, like we've worked together on some, you know, 13485 audits as well. So kind of doing a bit of everything, all related to medical devices, basically.
Exactly. So Adam is my go-to person sometimes for some audits also. So I'm really happy to have him also on the team here. Great. So Adam, as I've said, we always receive this question from manufacturers that are starting to think of selling their devices in Europe. And mainly the question is about, I don't have a facility. I am by myself sometimes. So it's like I'm one-man person. So, and I want to sell products, but I'm not the legal manufacturer I'm not the manufacturer, physical manufacturer of those products. So in the UK, we have a term that was created. I saw that by in the UK, which is virtual manufacturer. I think it's like that. So it's mainly being virtual, not having a manufacturing plant, so being virtual. So can we just explain again what means this term of virtual manufacturing, so that we see if some of the people that will be listening now are included inside this category?
Yeah, so it's a good point. So the term virtual manufacturer is not really recognized formally anywhere in EU essentially. So it was created, coined by the MHRA after the EU Commission, like when the UK was still in the EU, when the EU Commission released recommendation 2013-473, which we can link to people. That is essentially the document which kind of governs how notified bodies should conduct surveillance on manufacturers. So it talks about sampling and, you know, the kind of nature of technical file inspections as well as audits. It was shortly after that it kind of went from being known, which is a bit more of an industry term, of own brand labeling, like OBL. I think people just, you know, OBL, but there's just so many acronyms, I just call it own brand labeling because it's just, I'm so afraid with acronyms that will confuse it. So but it was shortly after that recommendation, was kind of released, that the MHRA kind of revised that terminology from own brand labeling to virtual manufacturing. And what they essentially defined that as was a virtual manufacturer is essentially an organization that does not undertake manufacturing. They still place a product that is manufactured and designed, although they do not hold the ownership for the manufacturer or the design, but they hold the ownership as a legal manufacturer. They cannot outsource their legal obligations.
Exactly. Yeah. So the thing is that, yes, this is possible to be selling a product that you are not manufacturing by yourself or you are not designing at all. So here we call it virtual manufacturer, as you've said, also OEM, OBL, on-brand labeling or original equipment manufacturer, on-brand labeling or private labeling. So if you are a virtual manufacturer now, can you be CE certified, which means that you have to fulfill all the requirements for the CE marking mainly, knowing that, as I've said, you have no manufacturing plant, you have no design mainly, or maybe you have some design, but no physical products that you are manufacturing by yourself. So can these companies still be CE certified?
Yes. So it's the same in the UK, essentially. They also can be. So the kind of business model as a virtual manufacturer is recognized by regulatory authorities and notified bodies as being a valid type of business. There does come caveats with it, you know, like you can do it, but you don't hold it, you know, you might not have a manufacturing site, you may not own the design. However, as I said just before that, you will be considered the legal manufacturer. Your name will be on that device. When it's placed on the market, that's the term, is like the placed on the market of that device. So when you place something on the market, you immediately take ownership of the general obligations as a manufacturer. And that is where I think you and I get a lot of questions and work with a lot of companies that do this, not realizing that they're not just putting something off the shelf on the market, that they are actually, they do kind of delve into that realm of being legal manufacturer.
Yeah. And meaning legal manufacturer, you are not physically manufacturing, but you are the legal manufacturer, which means that in front of the authorities, you are responsible for anything that is happening on the product, correct?
Yep, correct. So it's your little manufacturing
black plant, yeah, the black plant symbol
from 15223. You know that it's your name against that. It'll be your details and your name that any you know notices or complaints about that product will go to. With that comes the liability as well of being inspected by regulatory authorities, i.e. competent authorities or notified bodies, will come to yourself. So you can do it, but you're essentially taking on all the liability of the regulatory requirements.
And what is important here, you talk about complaints. I had some manufacturers that contacted me and said, I received a complaint about these products, but the supplier doesn't feel responsible for that. And they asked me to answer about this complaint, but I'm not manufacturing the product, so I'm not doing anything. So I'm just buying the products, put my name on it and sell it. So I don't do anything else. So, and they say, why am I responsible? It should be the supplier of the product, the OEM, the original equipment manufacturer, that should be responsible because they are the manufacturer of the product. So why is it not that situation here?
So I feel the pain of these companies. You know, I totally see it. You know, I think especially when you're in the space and you're a regulatory person, it's kind of, I understand. But the original equipment manufacturer or, you know, whoever makes that is not placing it on the market. And that is really the key term about this. It is whoever places it on the market and undertakes that role as a manufacturer that then takes on the general obligations of a manufacturer. So for those companies that have difficulty in dealing with, you know, like in issuing corrective actions, say to the OEM, then that is going to be something that you need to do with that at the very beginning when you're actually getting into this arrangement, which is when we need to discuss like agreements. You know, there needs to be a good agreement in place where you need to make sure that you have a good relationship with them, because they pretty much can stand back with their hands up and say, well, you're the legal manufacturer. And they might have people like us on their side to say, you're not the legal manufacturer. You're just a contract manufacturer. Your obligations end here. When you send that to them and they start distributing it out to the union, that's where the kind of contract manufacturer's responsibilities end. It's a sweet business being a contract manufacturer, it seems.
Exactly. but what is interesting is that the legal manufacturer also takes the responsibility for registering this device in the country. So he is the one that says, I will sell these products in this country and I will register these products in this country. It's not the OEM who decided that. The OEM just sells this product. He never said to you, you have to go to Europe or US or wherever. Yeah. So mainly when you go to Europe, as we said, it's CE marking for medical devices. So here, when we say CE marking, we specifically look at the Article 10 for manufacturers then. So as we said, you are the legal manufacturer. Even if you are a one-man show company, you have to fulfill all the obligations of the Article 10.
Yep, correct. So that is where I think we see a lot of organizations begin to face pain with this, is because with that, Article 10 does apply to these virtual manufacturers, regardless of the size. There's no kind of stipulation like there is under Article 15 for like PRRC for which I thought would be maybe a nice addition, like, but there still needs to be control, but there is no stipulation around company size or anything like that. It's very clear that if you are a manufacturer, you're placing a device on the market, you must demonstrate compliance to Article 10.
Means product compliance, quality management system compliance. So it's everything then.
Everything basically, yeah. It's everything.
So when we say quality management system, it means that even if you are a one-man company, you have to have procedures, following ISO 13485, getting an internal audit of your company, it looks like a big monster for a small company like that.
Yeah, it essentially is, yeah. So it is quite, that, I think that's where we see a lot of organizations that kind of get stung, because they go into it thinking, oh, I'm just putting my label on it and my packaging. But then, you need to demonstrate that you have an agreement in place with your contract manufacturer, that you're controlling that contract manufacturer. The expectation of the level of control that I've seen from notified bodies on this is very high as well. They're really not, especially for higher class devices that are contract manufactured, that is, the notified bodies really expect to see a lot of control being demonstrated by the virtual manufacturer. With that as well, comes in all, even though you're not designing the product, the virtual manufacturer still has to hold that technical file and make sure that technical file is available for review by the notified bodies. If there's an issue, say with like clinical information in it, that the notified body is not going to raise the finding on the contract manufacturer. The finding will be on the virtual manufacturer.
Exactly. Mainly the technical file can be also a problem when we talk about virtual manufacturing, is that, as I said, we are not manufacturing the product, so then we are relying on the OEM or the supplier or subcontractor or that will provide us all the details about how they are manufacturing, because mainly on the technical file, you have the section of design and development, and you have the section of manufacturing, and you have the section of quality control, and you have all those sections that you cannot just transfer that to the OEM or the supplier to say, oh, it's not me, it's him, so I will not be feeling this information, etc. So the important thing here is that, as you've said, a good collaboration with the supplier OEM is important. But yep, getting all the data and understanding that those data are really critical and that a notified body can check those data also is really important. So here, what do you have, some advice maybe for some of those companies that are dealing with this situation?
Yeah, so I think if we, and in the spirit of quality management, if we think preventive, so I'd say, first of all, if you've not got a device placed on the market and you're intending to as a virtual manufacturer, do your due diligence on the CMO that you're going to use. Look at the device that you're intending to place under evaluation to be placed on the market. Do your due diligence as in what that technical file is going to look like, and have those conversations to see whether they've done this before. You know, if they're able to, you know, essentially I would start with a gap assessment of what does my technical file need to look like, and start doing that backwards instead of once you've got something on the market, then trying to build a technical file. You know, because the contract manufacturer is not going to have, depending on if they've done this for other manufacturers or not, but it's very unlikely that they're going to have that, or that they will give you a full technical file that you can just leverage. You know, you're going to have to ask them and say, what biological evaluation have you done for this? Have you done, if any, you know, have you got like say 10 seal strengths defined for your any seals, like critical seal parameters, etc. You know, and ultimately that's, I'd say that upfront is relationship building with that contract manufacturer is really important. You need also need to get in your agreement with them that they're going to be happy to be inspected by your notified body, and competent authorities, because they it's likely that they will want to be in, and that is a provision that the notified bodies and competent authorities would want to see in your agreement that you've got them to sign that. If they refuse to sign that upfront, then you know, you kind of know who you're getting into business with.
Exactly.
You know, so, and if they don't want to sign anything like that, then I would really caution getting involved with a contract manufacturer.
What we are doing mainly, also, I mean, from Easy Medical Device, what we are doing with our customers. So we have some customers we are working with as a, in terms of design and development. And then we are arriving at a stage where we have to look for a manufacturer for those products. So on the design phase. So the idea, what we are proposing is mainly what we can do is a due diligence mainly. So the idea here is to go and to verify that this contract manufacturer is not a garage, if I can say, using those terms, to say, to check if they have procedures for what they are doing, if they have somebody that can really pick up the phone when we are calling and not like the line is always closed or there is nobody, etc. Those kind of small things, that, which it's why I call it a due diligence, not like an audit, it's like a due diligence, just to verify that the system is working, the company is working, they have a system, a quality system, they have the right people in place. You look at some manufacturing process and see if they have documenting all this and that, etc. If you arrive and there is nothing, there is once, just maybe for the story, once we went to a Turkey for a manufacturer. So we went there and the marketing side was excellent, if I can say so. Colorful, a lot of things with a lot of logos of certification, ISO, blah, blah, those kind of things. You arrive to a meeting room with a lot of trophy, diplomas, whatever. I mean, those kind of things, like, wow, we arrived to a great company. And then we say, okay, let's visit also the manufacturing plant. And we went and we asked, do you have a procedure for assembly of those things? No. Do you have a training of your people? No. Do you have, I mean, at the end, it was like, you have nothing. How do they know that they have to do that? Oh, we train them at the beginning. I say, yeah, but how somebody knows that they are doing exactly the same thing at the same time. Everybody's doing the same. How are you, even the traceability was like, how are you tracking all the things that are inside the machine and the thing? Oh, the serial number is provided at the end. Yeah, but how do you know what was inside then if I asked you where is this motor or whatever? Oh, no, it's fine. We know that. We know that. It's like, okay, guys, it's really a big alert to say, okay, I see that you have a lot of certificates. I don't know who gave you that. I'm not really sure exactly of your thing, but no, we will not go there. So don't be, if I can say, impressed by some certificates, diplomas, whatever. No, go and see by yourself. And a due diligence is really the methodology I would really recommend here.
Hey, just a second. Do you need an EU, Swiss or UK representative? Then choose Easy Medical Device. We can represent you and also become your importer. Contact us at eo@easymedicaldevice.com.
Totally. And I think due diligence, and then another term is kind of like routine control.
Yeah.
Is like demonstrating routine control over that CMO. So, you know, particularly if they are outsourcing elements of the manufacturing process, for example. So if they are having part of your product sterilized, for example, then that sterilization house will also then be in that chain for being audited again. And, you know, the virtual manufacturer should be assessing, you know, the validation reports from that sterilization. Say if it's like gamma sterilization, for example, if like they should be checking the dose audits, the frequency of them getting they should be able to see all the reports coming out. You know, it's not, I think it's not as hands off as people may think, you know, now anyway, in particular with like the approach that notified bodies are taking this, again, particularly for like class 2A, 2Bs, you know, they're really not like happy with, oh yeah, well, we have a contract with a virtual manufacturer. They have some people that sterilize it, but we don't see that because it's them that do it. They want to see that you have seen and reviewed the contract that say that OEM has with, say, the sterilization house. And they want to see that you, as the virtual manufacturer, are reviewing like validation reports and bringing it into your system and incorporating it, which makes sense because it needs to form part of your, say, your post-market surveillance system, as well as, you know, the general kind of feedback into the quality system. So I'd say routine control is so key in this process, and the day-to-day, if you have a good CMO running it, is different as well.
Yeah, and I think you have to start with the saying mainly in your head that there is no trust of this CMO at the beginning, and then release maybe, if I can say, for example, when I say no trust, is like at the incoming inspection, you do 100% check, and then maybe after 5 or 6 orders, you do only an 80% check, and then after 6 orders, you do a 50% check, etc. So as long as there is no issues, you can reduce, and prove that also with your procedures. And as soon as you find one issue, you can go back to maybe 100% check for a few weeks and redo again this chain, etc., which will help you to reduce also your overhead, if I can say, to check all those things, but also show also to the CMO that mainly you are starting to trust what he is doing, but document all those things also, which the notified body will be checking. In terms of quality management, same, we talk about manufacturing that is not under your control, but in the case also that design is not under your control, so you are not the one designing, so you are just, as I said, buying a product that is from A to Z made by the CMO and not by you. So how should we handle that also?
So typically in these situations, the design is not owned by the virtual manufacturer. So in that case, it's always kind of good practice to align it with what your ISO 13485 system says. So if you have like a certified ISO 13485 system, then if you're acting as a virtual manufacturer, you certainly wouldn't expect to see design and development as included in your ISO 13485 certification scheme. You would expect it to be excluded permission because of regulatory requirements. So in that case, when it comes to your technical file and that documentation, they would still, the MDR again is quite clear on this. And as we said, it does not recognize this terminology of a virtual manufacturer. So technical documentation for design and development under MDR as a virtual manufacturer, there still would have to be a level of specification, like design specification, like that is available for review by the notified body. Because if you send them essentially nothing on it or no information on it at all, they're just like, you know, if I know, because I do technical fair reviews, and you know as well, Munir, if you're just sitting there's nothing there, you don't know what to do. In that case, you're like, where does that stop? So you would still have to make available, you would not be expected to have user needs, design inputs, you know, design validation, all the essentially like 7.3 of 13485, but you would still be expected to make available, and as part of your technical file, some specifications around the design, you know, and really kind of those really high level elements of it. You would be expected to provide the full waterfall system basically, but still something on it, which you should again be able to get access to through your contract manufacturer without kind of compromising their intellectual property as the holders of that design.
Exactly. And some manufacturers, and this is the issue, that some virtual manufacturer or CMO can say, oh, no, we're not telling you that because it's our secret sauce. And if we tell you that, then you'll copy our products, et cetera, et cetera. So there are also those kind of arguments that are provided by the CMO for that. Sometimes I'm saying to CMOs, yeah, but if you don't give that to us, we cannot sell your product, so you cannot sell to us. So then, so at the end, you are losing also. So what is maybe your advice about this here?
Yeah, so that, again, back to the start of it, in that relationship, building that relationship would be to, and, you know, again, as part of the technical agreement that you have with that CMO would be that they make available to you design information. You know, although you would not be the holder of the design, if any changes happen to that design which would affect your product, you would need to know about that. So that then links to, you know, 7.4.2 of 1345 when we talk about the notification of change. As the manufacturer, the legal manufacturer, you need to know what's going on in the design. So whilst you don't own it, you still need to have a way of ensuring that that design is not changing. And it's, and if it is going to change, that you know about it, and you have, you know, you have the relevant levels of awareness for it that you require. So in that case, I would be saying very at the very beginning, contract manufacturing engagement, look into it, make them really open and aware. And, you know, I would like educate these contract manufacturers on the requirements that we have to meet as medical device manufacturers, because I see this and you see this probably when you assess contract manufacturers. They do loads of other stuff, like they do lots of food manufacturing, packaging manufacturing to like ISO 22000. And then all of a sudden they get brought in to manufacture for medical devices. And it's just this another level that they've not seen. So I would sit down and show them and say, here's what I require for my technical file. You know, I need to show something on design, otherwise your product will not be cleared for the market. You will be audited by them on this. So I'd let them know. But I would say, you know, I need to see this, and we need to make a deal on a level of information and design specifications that you're happy to share. But then, you know, obviously in place, you would have non-disclosure agreements with them. You know, there would be a contractual intellectual property protectment in there as well, to say, you know, that you're not essentially going to steal their design. But I think the main premise on it is educate your contract manufacturer. Like, the journey to become a medical device manufacturer and placing something on the market in the EU, even the UK, even under, you know, kind of the old regime, still quite a big one if you've never done it before. So education is the first part for me with your contract manufacturer. It's a partnership.
Exactly. And I suppose this education can be, so before, when I said we to do a due diligence, maybe the idea is not to say to them that you are doing a due diligence. The idea is to say, I'm going to meet you and discuss with you, visit your facility and review with you. And then this can be also the phase where you are checking, but also educating them. So having also the right consultant that is helping you on this can be also working, I hope, very well here. One thing that is important also, because now that we have said what we have said, if I can say at the beginning, you are not a physical manufacturer and you want to get CE certified. And after all what we have said, like you need to have a CE a quality management system, a technical file, an agreement, etc., all those kind of things. I suppose some of the audience are now scared and say, I don't want to do all this. So, what is the alternative? And this I can say mainly because I'm also advising that to some of my customers. The alternative is that if this product is already maybe CE marked by the OEM or the CMO and can be placed on the European market, you can just be the importer for this product. So you import this product and you place it yourself on the market as an importer, but you will not be the legal manufacturer. And this is the issue that I see from some of those companies. They say, I don't want that we are seeing the name of the original manufacturer. I want to see only my name and everything and my brand, etc. So one thing is important is that if you are the importer, the name of the manufacturer will be there. So there is no kind of difference. The only thing that you can negotiate, and I advise that sometimes to some manufacturers, I say, you can negotiate that the original manufacturer puts your logo on the product and put that on the technical file and grade that as a, because the logo is just a picture. So it's like, it's my picture. Here is my picture of my product. It's not like, I like this picture with this color, with this thing, and I want to put it on my product. And at the end, it's like a negotiation to say, put my logo on the product, put my name, your name will be there as legal manufacturer behind the small black plant symbol. But for the rest, it's my colors, my pictures, my thing, etc. And you can negotiate that with this company. They will still own the CE marking. They will own the quality management system. They will own everything. You are just the one selling, and here your brand will be there. But as I said, the name of the original manufacturer will be also there. So do you have arguments for that, Adam?
No, I'd say but that's a solid approach. I think that probably suits what a lot of the people that you and I speak to in terms of what they want from it, because they. I see it from when I work with clients, and they have this shock when I say, well, do you have a technical file? And they're just like, you can just see the eyes widen, and it's like, you know, this, it's never expected. The thing with it still is that even as an importer within the EU, you still have obligations as an economic operator. So I think they say, you know, nothing in life is free.
Exactly.
You know, and I think in that sense, in terms of that route, if that is a route that kind of suits what you want to do with that business, you know, you definitely don't need to hold a technical file. You wouldn't have to, like, you know, you wouldn't need to essentially potentially conduct biological evaluation testing, transport stability, you know, validations, everything. You know, you would essentially just need to meet your requirements as an importer from NDR, you know.
Exactly.
So I would say that is definitely a nice alternative for a lot of manufacturers. And like you said, there's deals to be done with the actual legal manufacturer or the contract manufacturers and that, you know, but there are still responsibilities as an importer.
Exactly.
Also, yeah, nothing's so, free.
As I said, if you need some support, so contact us at Easy Medical Device. We can also help you for authorized representative, because you'll have also you'll need also an authorized representative for the CMO, not for you as an importer. So we can also have some work to do there. Great. I think we covered mostly what we wanted to say. So have a quality management system, have a technical file. You will have maybe an audit by a notified body if you are not a class one device. You'll maybe need an agreement with your CMO. I mean, you need to audit them. I mean, it's a lot of work. So don't take it like, oh, I just buy and sell and it's fine and I make a lot of money. No, you'll have for medical devices some obligations. Maybe you can do that in another field, but in this field, you'll have to be the legal manufacturer and then have some obligations. Anything else, Adam?
I think the last thing was just on some, just I want to kind of just a little bit of a caution not to do more fear, but just on the kind of most common issues that I've seen in this. And I think you okay. could add some to this as well, Munir. So I think the first one is, you know, is not an inadequate quality system. But I think that comes from virtual manufacturers not being aware of Article 10.9 and what they need to have in place. I think a real area that I've really seen is the clinical evaluation side of technical documentation is really lacked upon, because a lot of virtual manufacturers just kind of say, well, why do I need to look at that, you know, kind of thing, as well as like transport stability testing, you know, journey hazard simulation testing are definitely areas. So I think it's very detailed, the elements that they struggle with. And then the last one was, again, overall, just on that routine control of that manufacturer. So not being able to evidence, you know, clear routine control of them. So not being able to evidence that you're reviewing the validation reports, that you're reviewing batch release, that you're doing inspections, that you're doing audits, is the second one. A lot of virtual manufacturers are quite hands-off, which does come back to bite them when the notified body looks to see that control being demonstrated.
And notified bodies, they will, at 90%, will check the CMO. If you have no manufacturing at all, so 90% of the time they will say, okay, this is considered as a critical manufacturer because he's doing everything. So mainly you are doing just the selling, but he's doing everything else. So then it can be considered as a critical manufacturer. Then 90% of the time, unless really some accident, the notified body will ask to go and visit that. So if you're manufacturer is in Indonesia or in Latin America or whatever, so then you'll have also to have, I think even the manufacturer will have to pay for that. So it's also that because they are not traveling for free, so they'll have to pay also to go there and visit this CMO. So don't be surprised by that. It's why we are telling you that now. It's don't be surprised by that.
Yeah, they do. I can confirm they do. The manufacturer that registers the application with the notified body picks up the costs of auditing the CMOs. And if they do unannounced audits, the manufacturer is expected to pick up the bill for that as well.
I had once a notified body that told me that the auditor went to a facility from a supplier, so many to audit them, and then they arrived and said, oh yes, enter, have a coffee, have everything, etc. And when the auditor wanted to go inside the facility, they say they made the tour of the full facility like outside, but when they say let me enter inside, they say no, you'll not enter inside. So he traveled like 12 hours to to this place, and then he says, I cannot audit you then, so I cannot certify you, or I cannot do anything for you, so then I have to return back. So 12 hours in, 12 hours out for nothing, because he was not able to audit everything. So this can be something that you have really to be taking care of, and inform the CMO also that yes, they can be audited unannounced also, and they have to let this person enter the facility and check everything. Otherwise, you as the virtual manufacturer can also lose your certification and can maybe never be able to sell this product also. So this is really important. Okay, Adam, so anything else that how you can help the audience maybe on this topic here?
Just really kind of basically everything we said. So you know, I work with clients as a regulatory consultant, so I'll go in and help people do due diligence on CMOs, as well as pick up projects where, you know, companies are a bit further down the line and they've appointed CMOs and now they're being asked for technical documentation and being assessed by notified bodies, so I can assist in, you know, kind of conducting those audits and from that kind of independent perspective, as well as actually doing, I think one of the things I pride myself on is that I'm not just an auditor, but I'm also not just a consultant. I kind of float between both worlds, so I can kind of, I keep up to date on what's happening and what's the expectation of the notified bodies. But I also understand what it's like being a manufacturer and working with manufacturers when you have resource constraints and knowledge constraints and stuff like that. So generally anything at all from quality auditing to kind of regulatory technical file submissions is a bit of what I do.
So if you have any projects ongoing and you hear us now and you say, oh, it would be great to have this kind of audits or due diligence, so don't hesitate to contact also Adam, and all the details will be on the show notes with the LinkedIn page and everything. Okay, Adam, so it was really a pleasure. Thanks again for all the details and all the information. It was really fun to have this this episode, and I wish you a nice day.
You too. See you soon. Thanks.
Mounir Elazouzi, a medical device expert specialized on quality and regulatory affairs. My mission is to help you learn how to place a compliant medical device on the market.